You're listening to the Community Mindfulness Project. The Community Mindfulness Project is a collaboration between Community Wellbeing North Canterbury Trust, Mindfulness North Canterbury, and Logan Smythe and Associates, bringing free science-based mindfulness and wellbeing courses, workshops, and podcasts to North Canterbury, made possible by AIA Vitality.
So with mindfulness, rather than trying to stop the thoughts from coming, of course, if that works for you, great, carry on. but if it doesn't work for you, then we are actually developing a different relationship with our minds. Mm. And that's what we're doing. We're not stopping something. We're developing a different relationship with it.
I'm Jess Davidson, and with me today is Kate Brandon Adams from Mindfulness North Canterbury. Kate is a registered mental health nurse and mindfulness teacher who lives in rural North Canterbury. In her 27 years of practice, Kate has specialised in holistic approaches to mental health and wellbeing, addiction recovery, and mindfulness. In this first episode of the Community Mindfulness Project, Kate will be dispelling the myths of mindfulness, what mindfulness is, what it isn't, and common misconceptions that might be stopping you from getting started with mindfulness. Kate, what exactly is mindfulness?
Mindfulness, so it's not a simple thing to describe. I think really because mindfulness means not just one thing, it means lots of things. And also, it's not really something that we can do justice with words. It would be a bit like trying to get a feel for what a meal was like by just reading the menu. We really get to know what mindfulness is actually by experiencing it.
Okay.
Yeah, and so that's why whenever you do a course or a training in mindfulness, a lot of it will be about actually experiencing mindfulness rather than just reading about it or talking about it. Saying all of that, it is also useful to have some sort of words and definition to go on. So there's lots of definitions out there. I think for me, mindfulness means actually being awake for my life. So being here for my life. And, you know, if we were going to kind of come up with maybe a new word for mindfulness with less of the mind bit in it, is I would say we would call it awarefulness.
Yeah. Nice.
So it's about being aware. It's about being aware of what is happening right here, right now, as it's occurring, whether that's in your body, whether it's in your senses, whether it's in your mind or your emotions. So we're being aware of what is here right now, as it's happening, as it's occurring. And we're doing that with a quality of kind of interest, curiosity, and not having to necessarily fix and change everything that occurs. We're kind of taking on this observer role of it. So all of that is really in service of actually being able to get to see our habits and patterns more clearly. Mm. What we're doing is we're getting to know, we're getting to see, we're getting this clarity. And when we have that clarity, then we're able to make choices more about how we respond and how we want to be, either in the moment or in our lives. And of course, Viktor Frankl, the Holocaust survivor and psychiatrist, has this beautiful quote that really just sums it all up in a nutshell. And he says that between stimulus and response, there is a space. And it's in that space that our power to choose a response, and our response lies our growth and our freedom.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. So to me, that's what this practice is about. It's about becoming more responsive and less reactive. Yeah. So instead of our reactivity coming from, you know, sort of just going around on autopilot, we're kind of slowing it down. We're being more aware of what's going on for us so that we can respond how we want to. So, of course, mindfulness isn't anything new. It's been around forever. And, it's I suppose it's become, I don't know, maybe more popular now because we're more and more getting immersed in this culture of busyness and distraction, and we're supposed to be always somewhere off in the future, and or everything's really conceptualized, you know, it's all through a screen. So I think people are really longing to reconnect with mindfulness because it's really something that's familiar and innate in all of us. So it's interesting. As a mindfulness teacher, I don't actually really teach people to be mindful because people already know how to be mindful. Yeah. They're already being mindful actually in parts of their lives. But really the training in mindfulness is more about remembering to be mindful and of strengthening the muscle, so to speak, of mindfulness. So that's kind of my job, is to support people to be more mindful and to come home to that innate experience of mindful living.
So we know what mindfulness is now. What is mindfulness not?
So I always really like to talk about what mindfulness isn't, because I've just found that I've met a number of people that are skeptical or have misunderstandings or misconceptions about mindfulness. You know, the problem is that when something becomes more out there and more popular, it can sometimes get a little bit kind of messed with. Mm. And so you get all this kind of misinformation. And the sad thing about that is that it either stops people accessing it in the first place because they have some idea of what it is, so it doesn't appeal. Or they start doing it and then give up because they're maybe not understanding or getting the support of a teacher with their practice. So I always like to talk about what it isn't. And I think, you know, some of the common misnomers that I've come across would be things like actually that it's a relaxation exercise. Yeah. And it isn't a relaxation exercise. Relaxation exercises are really great and really important, okay? They're a wonderful skill to have. It's just that mindfulness isn't one.
Mm.
It is different. Yes, certainly some of the practices that we do activate what we call the parasympathetic nervous system, which is our rest and digest and relaxation. Absolutely. But the agenda of mindfulness isn't to make us relax, because the agenda of mindfulness is to be with our experience as it is. So you can imagine if you go into doing a mindfulness practice, it's all very well if you are relaxed, that's great, but what if you're not? Mm. What if you're feeling irritable? What if you're feeling sleepy? Yeah, what if you're feeling anxious? So the difference is that mindfulness, it allows us and equips us to be able to be with our experience as it is. Mm. Whereas as soon as you start going, oh, why am I not relaxing? I really need to relax, you know, then of course you get all kind of agitated about it. And then people give up because they're like, this stuff's not working. I'm not relaxing. Mm. So I think that's a really important point of difference. But as I said, you know, it still does have a component of certainly activating that relaxation response as well. It's just not what we're aiming for.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. There are practices, there are mindfulness practices that are around breathing. They're about awareness of the breath. But there's also lots of other mindfulness practices that aren't to do with the breath. Mm. Okay. And again, the point of difference is that, you know, breathing exercises, wonderful things, really important if you experience anxiety and stress. But with mindfulness, we're not manipulating or changing the breath. We're being with the breath as it is. And again, interestingly, just the experience of being with the breath as it is, without trying to mess about with it or make it be in a certain part of the body or a certain depth or whatever, actually activates the parasympathetic nervous system.
Mm.
Just the actual being with our breath as it's breathing us is relaxing. So that's another thing that I often say to people is that, yeah, breathing exercise is great. It's just we're not changing the breath when we do that kind of practice. Another one that I hear also is that it's about trying to stop our minds from thinking. Now, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing?
Oh, yes.
I would be very famous if I was able to do that. And let's face it, it's a pretty understandable thing to want to do, you know, especially if thoughts are really unpleasant and difficult. It's pretty normal and understandable to want them to go away and to stop them, yeah? And I don't know about you, Jess, but have you ever tried stopping your mind from having certain thoughts?
Multiple times. Unsuccessfully.
And how did that work for you?
Not great. Not good.
Yeah. So this is it, hey? And I'm exactly the same. It's like, God, if it worked, great. But, but actually what people notice is that when they try really hard to not have certain thoughts, they actually kind of get louder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like what you resist persists. It kind of gives them energy. So the thing is with mindfulness, we're not trying to have a blank mind or stopping the mind from thinking. Predominantly because that's what minds are for. That's their use.
Yeah.
So a bit like, you know, our eyes are, we have eyes to be able to see. We have glands that secrete hormones. Minds are there to secrete thoughts. That's their job.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the more that we try to not have thoughts, as I said, you know, often that's where we get really distressed and really preoccupied with having those thoughts. So with mindfulness, rather than trying to stop the thoughts from coming, of course, if that works for you, great, carry on. but if it doesn't work for you, then we are actually developing a different relationship with our minds. And that's what we're doing. We're not stopping something. We're developing a different relationship with it. And that goes for all of our experiences, including emotions. We're not becoming emotionless. We're not becoming, you know, people that are kind of zombies with blank minds. We are developing what gets called an equanimity with it, so that we can have the minds doing things, but we're not so caught up with them.
Is meditation the same as mindfulness, or are they different?
It's a really good question, because it is confusing, and they do often get used interchangeably.
Okay.
So from my perspective, yeah, there's lots of different types of meditation. From a mindfulness point of view, mindfulness is bigger than meditation.
Okay.
Yeah, so mindfulness can include meditation, or what we would call a formal mindfulness practice. So what I mean by that is that we're carving out a certain amount of time, you know, maybe 10 minutes, something like that, where we are just practicing something that is training our brain in a certain way. And that's what we would call a formal mindfulness practice, aka meditation, mindfulness meditation. So if we think about meditation in general, there's lots of different types of meditation, yeah? And I'm no expert on all those different types. I just know there's lots of them. And of course, different types of meditations come from different backgrounds, and they have different agendas and different things that they're doing. So with mindfulness meditation, we're not trying to create a special state. We're not trying to float off somewhere. We're not trying to kind of zone out. And in fact, the opposite. We're rather than trying to get somewhere else, we're trying to be where we already are. Yeah. And you know, that's not very easy a lot of the time, because there's a lot of things pulling us in all sorts of other directions, you know.
Of course, yeah.
You know, we live in this world, don't we, where things are going ping all the time, and distractions and busyness and trying to multitask. There isn't a good or a bad mindfulness practice. You know, some of them you'll have a busy mind, and some of them you'll have a quiet mind. And we're observing the difference, yeah, that there's, yeah, that one's not better or worse than the other. And so, you know, it really is a profound but not easy practice to actually spend more time actually here, rather than transcending our experience to go somewhere else.
Is mindfulness a religion?
Mindfulness itself isn't actually a religion. And so that can be something that can possibly put people off, is that they feel that they're going to have to join some sort of religious community. And so The courses that I teach and that many clinicians teach are what we call secular mindfulness. So they have no connection with any kind of philosophical or religious beliefs, and you certainly don't need to be an anything to be able to practice mindfulness other than actually a human being, because it's predominantly what we're doing is we're exploring what it is to be human and find ways to be with our human experiences. And you don't need to join a religion to do that.
So with all that in mind, Kate, can anyone practice mindfulness?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah, and this is it, is that we've got to remember that this isn't something that that we're adding to ourselves. It's something that we already have. It's innate in us. If you think about yourself when you were a child, you know, it's kind of that sort of that awe and that wonder and kind of, you know, often being a lot more present in our lives. And so it's really about coming home to that place more often. So, yeah, I absolutely believe that that everybody can practice mindfulness. And the other thing is that, you know, often we already are.
Oh, okay.
So it's about how we frame it, isn't it? You know, it's like if you think about maybe times when you're being really creative, maybe playing a musical instrument or listening to music, even playing like a sport or exercising. You know, if we're really aware of our senses and our body, then, you know, often we're actually being quite mindful.
Oh, yeah. Wow, yeah.
You know, they have all these kind of colouring books and things these days. Yes. Not suggesting that is necessarily a mindfulness practice. It's how you do it. But often things that are very focusing and you're really, really present and there for them, you know, often there's parts of our lives where we're already doing that. And so it isn't some kind of weird, strange thing that we've got to learn how to do. It's something that we are able to practice more and to kind of build that muscle so that we spend more time being mindful. Not all the time, but more time being mindful. So, Jess, if you're willing, we can actually just do a little bit of mindfulness right now.
Okay, I'm ready.
How's that sound?
We'll try it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So importantly, we don't require any special equipment for this.
Perfect.
Yep. We don't need to get in any weird positions.
Awesome. I can't bend in those positions.
And we certainly don't need to be kind of wearing any special outfits or anything like that. We're just going to be just as we are right here, right now.
Okay.
So what I'm going to invite us to do is actually just to pause for a moment. So you might like to kind of maybe drop your gaze. You don't have to close your eyes particularly. It's just like pressing the pause button in your day. You may just start to notice your body sitting here, and that you have a body. Noticing where your feet are making contact with the floor underneath you. Maybe where the chair is touching you, clothing's touching you. Any other sensations in the body that you can feel right now? Maybe some movement from the breath breathing you. Just moving your attention to the sounds that are here with us right now. And then opening your eyes if they've been closed and just looking around. So that was about, I don't know, a few seconds? Wasn't very long?
No, it wasn't.
No. So what did you notice when you did that?
I noticed that it took a little bit for me to stop being in work mode, but once I did, I could hear like there's a noise over to the side of me that's ticking away, that can hear the hum.
Yeah.
And it just all of a sudden going from wired and asking questions to,
yeah.
It didn't take long.
No, that's what's so amazing. And, you know, that really is just a few moments wherever we are in our day.
And you could do that anytime, couldn't you?
Absolutely. It's so accessible.
Mm.
And it's like it's just there.
Yeah.
It's just there. We're just prioritising it.
This is the Community Mindfulness Project. I'm Jess Davidson, and today I'm with registered mental health nurse and mindfulness teacher, Kate Brandren Adams, talking about what mindfulness is, what it isn't, and common misconceptions that might be stopping you from getting started with mindfulness. What happens on a mindfulness retreat?
The retreats would be different in the fact that the retreats are more about just doing the practice, and they would be often guided. So especially the smaller retreats I do, they're fully guided. So basically you don't have to work out what you're doing next. You are just being fully guided from one mindfulness practice to the next.
That sounds great.
And again, like there's nothing to get right, nothing to achieve. You're just having this opportunity to just be in your own presence, obviously with others, but you've got this time just to be with yourself.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I do hold my retreats in periods of what we call sacred silence. And, you know, because we don't have a lot of silence in our lives, and people just love it because finally we just have that little bit of time where, of course, it isn't silence because there's always sounds, often sounds of nature and things around us. And so, you know, we get this opportunity to just let the nervous system rest and get some continuity in our mindfulness. So instead of doing a mindfulness practice and then being pulled out because we've got to go and pick the kids up or we've got to rush home or whatever, is that we can just do that sort of continuous practice, which people often feel really nourished by.
Yeah. So, Kate, can you tell us a bit about the science of mindfulness?
So for me, the science is really important. As a health professional and with a science background, I just really needed that as my doorway. And I kind of want to know how it works and, you know, see some evidence for it. I wanted to kind of, see some of that science that backed it up. And I suppose, you know, over the last, I don't know what it would be, 20, 30 years, we've been really fortunate in the fact that there's been a lot of progress in things like neuroscience and also including things like functional MRIs, which means that we've been actually able to see live people's brains reacting to things. So it's really started to give us this sort of scientific evidence that what ancient wisdom has been saying forever is actually true, and it does work, and it does make a difference. It does make a difference to people's well-being. Predominantly, you can't really talk about the science of mindfulness without talking about neuroplasticity. Luckily, our brains aren't stuck. Yeah, they're changeable. And so, and in fact, really, our brains are kind of more akin to a muscle than anything else. So what we do with our brains, what we focus on, what we pay attention to, what we do over and over starts to shape the brain. And so this is really what we're using with our mindfulness practice, is that we are practicing certain qualities in our practice over and over again, and we're kind of rewiring and reshaping our brain in a certain way that is beneficial to us. And of course, you know, this neuroplasticity is actually happening all the time. But with things like the mindfulness practice, we're actually choosing how we want to shape the brain so that there's qualities such as concentration, attention, non-reactivity that we actually want to have more of, so to speak. And so this is why it's so important that to become more mindful, we actually need to be doing the practice of being more mindful. We need to do the actual practicing of being mindfulness. Because if we just read about it or we just listen to stuff about it, it all sounds very wonderful. But of course, that isn't actually going to reshape your brain. Mm. So the only way we're going to reshape the brain is by doing the thing that we want it to do. That makes sense. Mm. So it's a bit like, you know, if you wanted a bigger bicep, you know, you wouldn't get much joy by kind of just reading a book about bigger biceps. You know, you'd actually have to do the bicep curl. Yeah?
Yeah.
And often that feels maybe a bit uncomfortable or a bit clunky or maybe even a bit boring. And you don't necessarily get an instant reward or gratification or change from it.
Mm.
And so, it's, you know, it's a really good analogy of how mindfulness practice works, is that over time, you start to see these changes occurring of some of these qualities that we're trying to train. It's a bit like taking your brain to the gym. That's what we're getting up to. So one of the things that they've shown starts to happen with ongoing mindfulness training is there's a number of things that they've shown start to change in the brain. But there's two that I'd like to pick out because I think these are really, really relevant. One of them is that the part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, which is kind of our rational part of the brain, the connections between that and the lower parts of the brain, the more kind of older, reactive parts of the brain, start to actually strengthen. And the more that we become this sort of kind, friendly observer of our experience, the more we're actually activating through that prefrontal cortex. So it actually becomes stronger, so to speak. And to be honest, the best way to describe this is actually through Dan Siegel's handy model of the brain. And you can actually look this up online, but I'm going to do it here, even though nobody can see me. But you can all look at your hands while I'm doing this. So if you imagine that your kind of wrist area is kind of your old part of the brain, that's your brainstem, okay? So that represents your brainstem. And that just kind of does all the automatic things that we don't need to worry about. And then if we take the thumb and that area in this model would be more to do with the kind of emotional, survival, reactive parts of the brain. Really, really important. And they have a very strong effect on our experience because they're to do with our survival. And they're also to do with getting our needs met. Okay. And then if you imagine wrapping your fingers over your thumb, so over the old part of the brain, that represents the new part of the brain or the prefrontal cortex. So this is kind of our executive function, our rational part of the brain. So what happens is that when something is of threat, then we get very strongly triggered through that old part of the brain or that limbic system where your thumb is. And what happens is that the new part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, actually pings up out of the way. So the message in the old brain is actually stronger. And we don't need the rational part of the brain when we're running away from the saber-toothed tiger or, in this case, you know, the car that's about to, you know, run us over or whatever's going to happen.
Mm.
So what happens is that new part of the brain pings out of the way. But, of course, most of the stressors in our lives these days aren't actually necessarily life-threatening things. They're worries about all sorts of stuff. They're things to do with have we done it well enough or whatever. But what happens, and some people might relate to this, is that we're actually then pinging our head. The prefrontal cortex is pinging all over the place. Yeah. And so it's a bit like, you know, feeling like you're kind of disconnected from your rational mind, which is when you kind of can't think straight. Mm. Yeah. So what they found with the mindfulness practice is the more that we practice, the more that prefrontal cortex is able to hold on longer. So even though there's a lot of stimulus coming through, it keeps holding on and it soothes that old part of the brain.
Wow.
And that over time, it starts to actually form connections between the two. So that means that we, in some ways with mindfulness practice, are kind of evolving our brains to not just be survival-based brains, that we have more of this wise kind of mind that's able to come in. so we're not just going around flipping our lids all over the place.
I love that. Yeah, that's awesome.
It really appeals to me. And the other one that I think is really important that they've shown is that we've got these two almond-shaped kind of parts of the brain called the, or one's called an amygdala, so two are called an amygdala. And these guys are really, really important because they're like our alarm system. So really important. But the problem is that if we've been through a lot of stress, I'm kind of thinking earthquakes, pandemics, you know, yeah. Just to name two, these amygdala get more and more and more fired up and they start alarming at everything. So they become oversensitized with time. The more the chronic stress, the more sensitivity, the more they're alarming. And so what they found with the mindfulness practice is that it actually starts to downregulate and soothe those amygdala so that they can come back down to their proper size. So they still do their job, but they're not oversensitive as much, which right. I think is really, really important. So the research is really interesting too. So the mindfulness-based stress reduction, or the MBSR, that's been around now for 40 years. That was developed by Jon Kabat-Zinn. This was where a lot of the more secular mindfulness research came out of. So it's been researched throughout all of that time. And so what's really interesting is that they found that mindfulness taught in that particular program is really helpful for a number of things. So things that that we've kind of already touched on, things like stress, anxiety, it can be helpful for them, but also chronic pain issues, chronic conditions can really be helped by it as well. And as we've just talked about, is it can be helpful for emotional regulation. Yeah, so regulating our emotions, not being so reactive, is often appealing to most people. And on the other side of it is you've got the things that it gives that are positive. So people notice that they're much more engaged in their lives. They're able to be more creative. They're noticing the good stuff more. Because mindfulness kind of works in these two ways. It helps us to build resilience by resourcing us, by helping us notice the good stuff more. Yeah. So instead of just letting it slip off, we're kind of going, actually, that's a really beautiful moment just right there. So it helps in that way. But it also helps us to be with the really difficult stuff too, without feeling overwhelmed and swamped by it. So whether it's different difficult experiences or difficult thoughts or emotions, we develop a different relationship with them. So it kind of comes at it from both angles.
Oh, it all sounds so amazing, Kate. Thank you so much for dispelling the myths that's brought us to the end of this first introduction. But I cannot wait to go through the other episodes with you and find out more.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Jess.
This podcast is produced by the Community Mindfulness Project in association with me, Jess Davidson, and Compass FM. The Community Mindfulness Project is a collaboration between Community Wellbeing North Canterbury Trust, Mindfulness North Canterbury, and Logan Smyth & Associates, bringing free science-based mindfulness and wellbeing courses, workshops, and podcasts to North Canterbury. Made possible by AIA Vitality.